on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sonarly, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How you doing? A few minutes after 6 o'clock now, 6:06, I guess. And Matt Flynn's not here, but he'll be back tomorrow. I'm Stu Daniels in today for Matt Flynn Direct for the next couple hours. Right here on WAUK, Waukesha, Milwaukee, and WTTN. I hope everybody had a good weekend. Hope you're having a good morning so far. And we're still in the same reality. Not much has changed since Friday when the ruling came down from the Supreme Court. But things could be worse, right? That's been my motto for a couple of years. And I don't know. I guess it could be worse, but it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine right now. Hey, good morning, Sam. How are you today?
I'm great, Stu. Well, great. Yeah. Relatively great, I suppose.
Right. Everything's relative right now. Yep.
Amen.
Yeah. And I don't know what you did over the weekend, but hopefully you were able to still have some fun despite everything that went on. I know some of our listeners probably went down to Chicago to see a couple of Grateful Dead shows, or Dead and Company shows, as they're known these days. I heard the first show in Chicago, the band chose the songs based on what went on with the Supreme Court. Was that Friday night or something? They devoted the entire set list to women. So that's a cool thing to hear, right? But I've been looking at some of the opinion pieces. By the way, if you want to join in the conversation, feel free. This is a call-in show. And your opinion is always welcome. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. And by the way, if you ever want to send me an email message, you can do that at stumanradio@gmail.com. Stu is spelled S-T-U. But I was looking over some of the opinion pieces that have come out in the last couple of days since the big decision by the Supreme Court on Friday to overturn Roe v. Wade. And a lot of people seem to be concerned about the fact that this may just be the beginning of what the Supreme Court has in mind, of what the conservatives have in mind. They obviously have been trying to overturn Roe v. Wade for a number of years, at least 40 years, right? And it looks like they might have their sights set on other rights that we as Americans enjoy. Clarence Thomas, in his opinion, said that maybe it's time to look at marriage equality and even contraception. So what are they going to do? Outlaw contraception? Are they going to be looking in your bedroom window to make sure that you're not using any contraception, waiting outside your bedroom door, going through your garbage to see if there are used condoms in there? Where does it end? It's hard to imagine. One piece that I want to go over here during this segment is from the New York Times. It's an op-ed piece from Linda Greenhouse, who I believe is retired now, but was the winner of a 1998 Pulitzer Prize. And she reported on the Supreme Court for the New York Times for a number of years, 30 years or so, from the 70s until about 2008. And then she was an opinion writer for many years until she retired like a year ago or so. But she decided to weigh in, even though she's not a regular contributor anymore. And we're going to go over a little bit of this story. Let me tell you that it starts out this way. They did it because they could. And this guest essay, by the way, the headline for it is Requiem for the Supreme Court. They did it because they could. It was as simple as that. With the stroke of a pen, Justice Samuel Alito and four other justices, all chosen by Republican presidents running on successive party platforms committed to overturning Roe v. Wade, erased the constitutional right to reproductive autonomy that the Supreme Court recognized more than 49 years ago. As the dissenting opinion written by Justices Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan observed, never before had the court rescinded an individual right and left it up to the states whether to respect what had once been anchored in the Constitution. The practical consequences of the decision, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, are enormous and severe. Abortion, now one of the most common medical procedures, will be banned or sharply limited in about half the country. Excluding miscarriages, nearly one in five pregnancies ends in abortion in the United States, and one American woman in four will terminate a pregnancy during her lifetime. Two generations of women in this country have come of age secure in the knowledge that an unintended pregnancy need not knock their lives off course. Quote, after today, as the dissent pointed out, young women will come of age with fewer rights than their mothers and grandmothers had, end quote. What the court delivered on Friday is a requiem for the right to abortion. As Chief Justice John Roberts, who declined to join Justice Alito's opinion, may well suspect, it is also a requiem for the Supreme Court. Consider the implication of Justice Alito's declaration that Roe v. Wade was egregiously wrong from the start. Five of the seven justices in the Roe majority, all of them except for William O. Douglas and Thurgood Marshall, were appointed by Republican presidents. Okay, let's go over that again. Five of the seven justices in the Roe majority back in 1973, all of them except for William O. Douglas and Thurgood Marshall, were appointed by Republican presidents. The votes necessary to preserve the right to abortion 19 years later in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the Roe follow-up decision that the court also overturned on Friday, came from five Republican-appointed justices. So, I mean, I think everybody understands that Republicans used to be for choice before they decided that women didn't have the choice anymore. Continuing with this opinion piece from the New York Times, in asserting that these justices led the court into grave error from which it must now be rescued, Justice Alito and his majority are necessarily saying that these predecessors joining the court over a period of four decades didn't know enough or care enough to use the right methodology and reach the right decision. The arrogance and unapologetic nature of the opinion are breathtaking. And then in parentheses here, she writes, of the justices who decided Casey in 1992, the follow-up to Roe, the only member of the court still serving is Justice Clarence Thomas, a dissenter then who wrote in a concurring opinion on Friday that now that the court has overturned the right to abortion, it should also reconsider its precedents on contraception, LGBTQ rights, and same-sex marriage. So we're going to get to more of this opinion piece in the New York Times after the break. Stick around. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. It's Stu Daniels in for Matt Flynn today on Matt Flynn Direct.
Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time.
right. The women are smarter. Man smart, woman smarter. Robert Palmer, one of his big hits from back in the day. Starting off this next segment, Matt Flynn directs. Stu Daniels in for Matt today, and he will be back tomorrow. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us on this last Monday in June. Yeah, it's the, 27th of June now? July just around the corner. And we've been discussing what everybody's talking about, right? The big decision by the Supreme Court released on Friday, overturning a woman's right to her own autonomy, to her own choice, how she's going to live her life. But that's all behind us now. And things are going to be different. We're going over an opinion piece in the New York Times, which we will continue in just a minute. But looks like we have Eastside Dave on the phone from Madison. Dave, what's on your mind this morning?
Oh, hello. I'm a longtime feminist, and I don't seem to talk about it too much, but I go back to the feminist movement in the 70s when I was an idealistic young man who thought, hooray, you know, it was kind of a spillover social movement from the 60s. It happened in the early 70s, and I listened to what the women said. I'm speaking of the woman for NOW, and I heard there's five or six main demands, and I thought it was all a no-brainer. I was like, hooray, this is going to be great for our country. It'll be better for the women of our country and an inspiration to the world, you know, as the leaders of the world, supposedly. And I'm just afraid for womankind right now. And as such, I want to recommend for anybody who would like to read a great magazine about women. It's called Womankind. Comes out of Australia. It's published quarterly. It's also expensive. It's lavish, glossy, with a lot of stuff written by women. You could possibly get it at our libraries. Otherwise, it's like probably $15 a magazine, you know? Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend that for anyone who is feminist-inspired. And yeah. Other than that, I just want... I'm running out of words, so...
Yeah. Womankind. Thank you for mentioning that, Dave. I'm sure a number of our listeners are going to check that out. Womankind is the name of the magazine. Thanks for the call, Dave. And let's continue now with this opinion piece that's in the New York Times this morning. And it was submitted by Linda Greenhouse, who was a reporter covering the Supreme Court for the New York Times for about 30 years. And then she was an opinion writer for another 10 or 15 years or so. And she has a guest opinion piece in the New York Times today, talking about the decision on Friday by the Supreme Court. Where we left off was where she was talking about that the parenthetical statement of the justices who decided Casey in 1992, which was the follow-up to Roe v. Wade. The only member of the court still serving from that period in 1992 is Justice Clarence Thomas, a dissenter then, of course, who wrote in a concurring opinion on Friday that now that the court has overturned the right to abortion, it should also reconsider its precedents on contraception, LGBTQ rights, and same-sex marriage. And that's the end of the parenthetical statement. She goes on and says, the dissenting justices wrote on Friday, quote, the majority's refusal even to consider the life-altering consequences of reversing Roe and Casey is a stunning indictment of its decision, end quote. They observed, and here's another quote, the majority has overruled Roe and Casey for one and only one reason, because it has always despised them, and now it has the votes to discard them, referring to Roe and Casey, the two decisions. The majority thereby substitutes a rule by judges for the rule of law. And that's the end of the quote from the dissenting opinion. And the op-ed piece goes on and says, those sentences are as terrifying as they are obviously correct. Where do they leave the court? Now, having voluntarily shed the protection offered by its usual stance that it is simply the passive recipient of the disputes that the public brings to its door. For several years, members of the new majority have been openly inviting opportunities to revisit Roe and Casey, just as the same justices, principally Justices Thomas and Alito, spent years inviting the gun lobby to bring cases affording an opportunity to expand on the Second Amendment analysis of the 2008 Heller decision. That campaign culminated on Thursday with the decision in the New York State gun licensing case. That case, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, of course, did not overturn an old right, but expanded on a new one. The court engaged in no such outreach at the time of Roe. To the contrary, the case reached the Supreme Court under a jurisdictional statute, since repealed, that required it to rule on the merits whenever a federal court had invoked federal constitutional grounds to invalidate a state law. A special three-judge federal district court convened under that statute had declared unconstitutional the Texas law that made abortion a crime except to save a pregnant woman's life. For the court to decide to take on Roe v. Wade, in other words, was the opposite of judicial activism. Friday's ruling, meanwhile, was judicial activism's epitome. A federal appeals court had blocked Mississippi law on the ground that the law's ban on abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy was obviously inconsistent with Roe and Casey. Those decisions protected the right to abortion up until fetal viability, or about 24 weeks. The state originally asked the justices to decide whether a ban on abortion before viability was always unconstitutional. Over Chief Justice Roberts' objection, the majority opinion went further, eliminating the right to abortion in its entirety. In a concurrence, the Chief Justice underscored just how aggressive the majority opinion was, writing, quote, surely we should adhere closely to principles of judicial restraint here, where the broader path the court chooses entails repudiating a constitutional right we have not only previously recognized, but also expressly reaffirmed, applying the doctrine of stare decisis, end quote. He added that its dramatic and consequential ruling is unnecessary to decide the case before us. But Justice Alito declined that call for restraint. The Chief Justice's quest for a middle way would only put off the day when we would be forced to confront the question we now decide, Justice Alito wrote. We'll continue with this piece after the break. Stick around. Stu Daniels here. You're tuned in to Matt Flynn Direct. Without Matt today, he'll be back tomorrow. If you want to join us on the phone, 844-967-2789. I'm being told by our producer that we still have a couple minutes. Is that what you're saying? Okay. You want me to read some more of this? Thank you, Sam. Hey, before we go to the break, let me just finish this paragraph that I'm in the middle of right now. You remember where I left off? It said Justice Alito declined that call for restraint. The Chief Justice's quest for a middle way would only put off the day when we would be forced to confront the question we now decide. The turmoil wrought by Roe and Casey would be prolonged. It is far better for this court and the country to face up to the real issue without further delay. There will be turmoil now for sure, as the country's highways fill with women desperate to regain control over their lives and running out of time. Speaking of running out of time, that's what I'm doing now. So now we're going to go to a break. Is that right? Yep. Stick around. We'll be back in a minute. You're tuned in to Matt Flynn Direct. Grateful Dead on a Monday morning. You're listening to, you're tuned in to Matt Flynn Direct. I'm Stu Daniels. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Monday morning. And we're discussing what everybody is discussing right now, the decision by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. Also taking your calls if you want to join in. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. We've been going over a piece that's in the New York Times this morning, an opinion piece written by Linda Greenhouse, who covered the Supreme Court for the New York Times for about 30 years and then was an opinion writer for quite a few years. She's retired now, but came out of retirement to throw in her two cents on this unbelievable decision by the Supreme Court. And we're reading her, we're going over her piece that was in the Times today. She was talking about how Justice Alito said that by not addressing the Roe decision right now would cause turmoil. The turmoil wrought by Roe and Casey would be prolonged. He wrote, Alito wrote, "It is far better for this court and the country to face up to the real issue without further delay." And Ms. Greenhouse writes in her opinion piece, "There will be turmoil now for sure as the country's highways fill with women desperate to regain control over their lives and running out of time, perhaps followed by vigilantes across state lines. But the only turmoil that was caused by Roe and Casey was due to the refusal of activists, politicians, and Republican-appointed judges to accept the validity of the precedents." Justice Alito's reference to turmoil reminded me of nothing so much as Donald Trump's invocation of carnage in his inaugural address. There was no carnage then. But there was carnage to come. 49 years is a long time, but professional lives, including mine, are long as well. Greenhouse writes that, "I was a freshly minted journalist at the New York Times in 1969 when I received an assignment to write about the growing controversy over abortion. I immersed myself in the issue, interviewing and learning from lawyers on both sides of the debate. On January 25th, 1970, the New York Times Magazine published my article under the headline, 'Constitutional Question: Is There a Right to Abortion?' It was, I believe, the first article in a general interest publication to survey the nascent constitutional arguments, and it has been quite widely reprinted. When I finished reading Friday's decision in preparation for writing this essay, I realized that I will have chronicled this profound issue across its entire arc, a perspective I never could have anticipated. Except, of course, that the story isn't over. Although Justice Brett Kavanaugh proclaimed with evident relief in his concurring opinion that the court was now bowing out of the picture and, quote, will no longer decide how to evaluate the interests of the pregnant woman and the interests in protecting fetal life throughout pregnancy, end quote, that is not likely to be the case. Those pesky women will keep coming up with problems. What about pregnancy-related medical issues short of imminent death? Rape, incest, fetuses doomed to die in the womb or shortly after birth. Will young teens be forced to bear children? Will women who receive a prenatal diagnosis of a serious fetal anomaly be forced to bring a child into the world who they can't care for adequately and in whom the state has little postnatal interest? What happens when states start prosecuting not only doctors, but women? Justice Alito has an answer to these questions. Quote, rational basis. A law regulating abortion, he writes, quote, must be sustained if there is a rational basis on which the legislature could have thought that it would serve legitimate state interests, end quote. And what might be such an interest? The list of legitimate interests is frightening. And this is a quote, I believe, from the opinion. It says, respect for and preservation of prenatal life at all stages of development, the protection of maternal health and safety, the elimination of particularly gruesome or barbaric medical procedures, the preservation of the integrity of the medical profession, the mitigation of fetal pain, and the prevention of discrimination on the basis of race, sex, or disability. With the exception of the first and second interests, the Casey decision itself recognized the state's interest in unborn life throughout pregnancy. These are anti-abortion dog whistles. The, quote, particularly gruesome procedures include a common method of second trimester abortion that some states have tried to outlaw. The, quote, integrity of the medical profession is a slam on doctors whom Friday's majority refers to as abortionists. The fetal pain issue is a canard, as fetuses lack the neural development to experience pain until late in pregnancy. And the discrimination issue refers, at least in part, to current state laws that would criminalize the abortion of fetuses with a Down syndrome diagnosis. Currently, most such pregnancies are terminated. And the dissenting opinion asks, quote, what about the morning after pill, IUDs, in vitro fertilization, or medical management of miscarriage, often the same methods used for abortion? No, justices, your work isn't done. What you have finished off is the legitimacy of the court on which you are privileged to spend the rest of your lives. So that's the opinion piece in the New York Times today from a person who was a reporter and covered the Supreme Court for over 30 years, Linda Greenhouse. Interesting stuff. What's your opinion? Yeah, feel free to give us a call. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. Wondering what you think. Where's it going to end? How far will they go? You think they're done? And what about lawmakers? What are they going to do now? Are they going to try to pass legislation to ban abortion nationwide so that women couldn't cross state lines? They couldn't go anywhere in the United States if they wanted to seek out abortion. Yeah, it's hard to say, but it seems like that's what they want to do. Whatever it takes. It's hard to believe we're at this point, but how many times have we said that over the past few years? Yeah, we're going to go to a break, and we're going to come back. How are we doing on time, Sam? Yeah, all right, let's go to a break. Feel free to give us a call, 844-967-2789. Let me know your opinion. We'll come back with more. You're tuned in to Matt Flynn Direct. To the people. You're tuned in to Matt Flynn Direct. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Matt today. He'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for tuning in to WAUK, Waukesha, Milwaukee, and WTTN Madison. Discussing several things today on the radio. Hope you'll join us at 844-967-2789. And if you want to send me an email, you can do so at stumanradio@gmail.com. Stu is spelled S-T-U. And what we've been discussing so far this morning is the decision by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. And I think we'll move on from that for now, although I'm sure we'll come back to it. But one thing I wanted to mention was the fact that over the weekend was the big Wisconsin Democratic Party convention. And I want to mention what was going on there in the story in the Journal Sentinel. Bill Glauber, the headline says, Democratic U.S. Senate candidates take jabs at Ron Johnson as they vie for support at the state party convention. And, boy, it's easy to take jabs at Ron Johnson these days. There are so many things to mention. It says here, four top Democrats may be running hard in the party primary for U.S. Senate, but on Sunday, yesterday, they turned their sights to the fall election and stood united on one thing, taking their best jabs at U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. During the Democratic Party of Wisconsin convention, the contenders sought to portray the two-term Republican from Oshkosh as out of touch, out for himself, and wrong on a range of issues from taxes to COVID-19 to the 2020 election. Quote, you know, Ron Johnson may say a lot of crazy things, but what he's doing in Washington is no joke. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes declared he wants to divide us. He's attacked organized labor, spread lies about COVID, tried to overthrow the government. Milwaukee Bucks executive Alex Lazary said, it's clear Ron Johnson doesn't give a damn about us, State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski said. Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson said Democrats had the, quote, urgent mission to send this lying, treason-loving, woman-hating Putin stooge back to his Florida vacation home to be with his billionaire father-in-law's money, end quote. Johnson, who faces the winner of the August 9th primary, is considered one of the more vulnerable Republican incumbents during the midterm cycle. Last week's Marquette University Law School poll showed Johnson trailing Barnes, Godlewski, and Nelson in head-to-head matchups while leading Lazary. I'm going to read that again. Last week's Marquette University Law School poll showed Johnson was trailing Barnes, Godlewski, and Nelson in head-to-head matchups, but he was leading Lazary. The results were all within the poll's margin of error. The election is November 8th. Mike Marinella, the Republican Party of Wisconsin Rapid Response Director, said the top Democratic Senate contenders, quote, want to duck, dodge, and distract through November. But as Democrat policies continue to fail, they can't hide from the truth about their records. Desperate attacks against Republicans are the only message Democrats can drum up as they refuse to face reality while Wisconsin families struggle. Well, you talk about refusing to face reality. The story continues and says all the top Democrats blasted last week's U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade, which brought an immediate halt to abortion in Wisconsin. Quote, I'm pissed because we've had 50 years to codify this into law, but the Senate has failed to prioritize reproductive rights, Godlewski said. And here's another quote. I am sick of this issue being treated as an afterthought, not just with Republicans, but even with our own party, she said. And I believe if we had more Democratic women at that table, we would have prioritized this a long time ago, end quote. In her speech, Godlewski stressed her Wisconsin roots, the push to save the treasurer's office and then win the seat. Look, people telling me winning this race is going to be hard and getting things done in the Senate will be even harder. But I've been underestimated my entire life, she said. Barnes said his story is a Wisconsin story. He spoke of his family's union roots and played up his ability to unseat Johnson. This campaign is beating Ron Johnson in a head-to-head matchup, and I am the only Democrat who is beating Ron Johnson with independents, Barnes said. Ron Johnson is more vulnerable right now than he has ever been, he added, because here's what he doesn't understand. We have more in common with each other than any of us do with a self-serving multimillionaire like Ron Johnson. Lazary leaned into his ties with the Milwaukee Bucks and the construction of Fiserv Forum as ways of showing, quote, progressive values are good for business and for workers, end quote. When we set out to build not just a basketball arena, but a jobs program that gave opportunities for minority-owned and women-owned businesses while paying a $15 minimum wage with a union, we delivered. And after 50 years, we set out to win an NBA champion. Giannis delivered. There's no way I'd take credit for that, Lazary said, of Antetokounmpo's performance in last year's NBA final. Nelson played up his roots in the Fox Valley and brought out a couple of bottles of beer to make a comparison between Wisconsin-made Spotted Cow and what he said was a watered-down-tasting big national brand. Quote, "I'm not the weak beer," he said, a veiled jab at others in the race. He sought to portray himself as the most progressive candidate in the field with his support for Medicare for All. And he called for the U.S. Supreme Court to be expanded, quote, "if we are ever to take back our nation from the clutches of this crazy cabal that has its hands around the throat of our nation." Nonprofit executive Stephen Olakara of Milwaukee, the son of immigrants from India, said he took an unlikely route to the stage. "I know what it's like to be an outsider in politics," said Olakara, founder and former CEO of Millennial Action Project, which brings together young elected legislators. He said his first piece of legislation would be to get big money out of politics, and said the best ideas in Congress should be coming from you and not the big money special interests. So there's a little bit of what went on over the weekend at the convention. Thanks for tuning into Hour 1. Stay tuned for Hour 2. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Matt Flynn today on Matt Flynn Direct. And you are tuned in to WTTN and WAUK.